With over 200 flavor notes to discover, Woodford Reserve is more than just a spirit. It's a spectacle for the senses. Toast to 150 years of the Kentucky Derby with the best bet in bourbon. Raise a glass of Woodford Reserve on this monumental celebration.
Live from State Street in the heart of Chicago, you are listening to the new home of the Chicago Bears, ESPN Chicago. And this is Carmen and Yurko, WMVP, WSHE, HD2, Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
And here we go on this Thursday. It's Carmen and Yurk live in our State Street studios. You can watch us every day on YouTube. Watch the show. Catch up on anything you missed by following our YouTube page. You must like and subscribe.
Yes.
Peace and love. Peace and love. Like and subscribe to the Carmen and Yurko page. We have our own page, Yurko.
We do.
I feel like we've made it.
We
have a YouTube page. All you have to do is go to youtube.com/@Carmen and Yurko or just search at Carmen and Yurko in your YouTube app on your smartphone. Like and subscribe, but you got to click that subscribe button, and you'll always be able to catch up on any of the interviews or funny show moments that you missed. You can watch the show live and be interactive with us there every single day. We have a lot to talk about. McKnight at the movies because it's Thursday. Jesse Rogers has a baseball update. Cubs, White Sox both lose yesterday. Bulls down to their final three. There's all kinds of stuff happening, but the big news in the country today is the passing of O.J. Simpson at 76 after a battle with prostate cancer. By the early 90s, O.J. Simpson was easily one of the most famous, recognizable celebrities in this country. I am too young to remember O.J.'s playing career, but as a young kid growing up in the 80s, as a sports fan, you couldn't help but know about the legend of O.J. Simpson at USC with the Buffalo Bills. And all I heard as a kid was, you didn't get to see one of the greatest ever, you know, O.J. Simpson. By the time I knew who O.J. Simpson was, the legend of O.J. Simpson was this great football player. He was a television pitchman.
NBC Sports.
He was on NBC Sports. He was running through airports, jumping over luggage, using his great running back skills for Hertz Rent-A-Car. He was a movie star because of the Naked Gun trilogy. He was a movie star.
Yes.
Because of that trilogy and the Abrams brothers putting him in that first Naked Gun.
Towering Inferno.
Towering Inferno, too. That's true. Good point, Yurk. He was a super celebrity. Right, Yurk? You'd agree.
Absolutely.
He was a super celebrity in this country.
And then he flushed it all down the drain.
And everything changed in 1994. And in the subsequent years. And it's unlike almost any story, or I don't even know what the comparable would be, to be quite honest. Someone who was that high, who was that famous, who was that great at his chosen profession, who had then made the segue into media and was quite good. As Yurko said, as a sports commentator, as a pitchman, as a star in Hollywood. I mean, there aren't many people that can make that kind of transition and then to have the double murder and the trial and everything else that came along with it. There's really nothing else like the life and times of O.J. Simpson, let's face it. Nothing that I can think of. And by 1994, by the fall of 1994, Yurko.
Yes.
This is 3 months after the chase, right?
Yeah.
Was it June 17th, 1994?
I believe you're right.
And we can get into that day in a little bit. They did a whole 30 for 30 on that day alone.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of incredible.
Crazy day.
3 months later, by the fall of 1994, the most popular show on television was Seinfeld. TV was a lot different back then. There wasn't as much, obviously. There just wasn't. But Seinfeld was the most popular show on television. And one of the early episodes of that fall season launch was the famous Big Salad episode. But in the episode of the Big Salad was the spoof of the O.J. chase, where Kramer was golfing with a fictitious former Yankee by the name of Steve Gendison. And they argued about a rule on the golf course, and Steve Gendison would later go on to kill a dry cleaner. And you can't, I mean, like, Seinfeld was spoofing the Bronco chase 3 months later, the most popular show on television at the time was spoofing The Chase 3 months later. And what subsequently followed over the next year plus, Yerk, I don't even know how to explain to people circus. That aren't old enough. Circus. Thank you. That's the word.
Yeah.
You nailed it. Yerko just nailed it in one word. Circus.
It was a circus. 100%. Absolutely. He wins the criminal case, loses a later civil case.
Right.
Where he owes the Brown family money. So, and then after that, it's just disgrace.
Yes.
O.J. Simpson, he won the criminal case, but nobody believed that he didn't do it.
Right.
You know, even his own lawyers knew that he had done it.
Of course. Everybody knows he did
it. Wins the, and it was spoofed later on, too, and if it doesn't fit, you must quit.
Well, they did. They
Kramer
spoofed.
Did that,
you're
too.
Right. They spoofed right? that, too. Seinfeld yeah. spoofed it a couple
yeah,
times. That's
exactly.
a great call. I
yeah.
forgot about that. Yeah. They did. If the bra, remember?
Yeah.
Sue Ellen Mischke's bra didn't fit. You can't put a bra on over clothes. It's got to fit like a glove.
Yeah, so I remember him a little bit as a player.
So you're old enough to remember some of the players?
Yeah, and they'd show some highlights. And you'd see some of that on the NFL films would have some stuff early on where they were still trying to plug programming in on different places. You'd get some NFL films on Orenthal James Simpson.
One of the most famous players of the 70s, Yerk, right?
Yeah,
I mean, would you
yeah.
say?
14 games he rushed for 2,000 yards, I believe.
That's pretty impressive.
14 games, 2,000 yards.
I believe you're right about that because yeah. the season was still a 14-game season back then.
It was about 77, 78 they switched that.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, yeah. It's darn right impressive.
You know, it's funny.
Back when
you...
the running back was king.
Yes, that's true.
Back when the running 50 years ago.
Yerko, 1973, 14 games. O.J. rushed for 2,003 yards.
Yeah.
He rushed for 143 yards a game, dude.
Yeah, that's impressive. How many rush per game in his career?
83.2 yards per game. He had 3 seasons
where it was just
over 105 rushing yards per. He had a 129 season, a 143 season, and a 107 season. He was doing that in 14 game seasons.
You know, it's the highest average, right? All time career.
So asking not yards per attempt, but yards per game?
Yards per game.
I'm going to guess it's either Jim Brown or Barry Sanders.
It's Barry Sanders, and it could be Jim Brown. I haven't checked, but look at Barry Sanders.
Okay.
I know Barry Sanders is up there at 100 yards a game. It's like 99.9, maybe.
Is it?
But you got to round up. You got to round up there.
99.8.
Is it? Yeah, 99.8. Now look at James Brown.
Come on. Come on now.
Jim Brown, not James Brown. James Brown, you get the broadcaster.
Or you get the singer, the performer.
Yeah.
104.3.
There you go.
That's probably your winner.
Jim Brown is probably
yeah.
your winner right
yeah.
there.
Yeah, I think he is. I think it's...
It's in dark.
Yeah. 104.3. Yeah. Oh, sweet Lord.
Yeah. Pretty good, huh?
Yeah. So, I mean, O.J. was like this football star, this media star, this movie star. He was this larger-than-life person.
I mean, he was fantastic. He was.
Oh, sure. Before
bigger
it all
life.
Went. Before,
he was bigger than life. Yeah. yeah before it went.
Before the world found out about
he
like
flushed it.
The dark side of
right.
O.J.
The womanizer.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. The domestic abuse and
right.
what it ultimately led to. The death, the senseless death, and the extremely violent death of two people. You know, Chicago had a weird connection to it. Remember when he flew here?
He flew here and he stayed at...
At the Hilton at the airport. Was
right.
it at York?
Well, not the Hilton at the airport. It was right down the street.
Oh, was it? I thought it
yeah,
was.
Yeah, it was like it's almost like next to the new toll booth that they put up over there.
Okay,
remember how they've been tearing them down and rebuilding
yeah.
them?
Is
it's
that
almost
what it was?
Right there. It's off to the right hand side. Yeah,
you know, Chicago had this weird connection to it in the days and the weeks that followed, and investigators were here looking for evidence and looking for things and wanting to know why he traveled here. And that was always kind of a weird thing for those of us that lived here that like it had a connection. And Yerko summed it up perfectly with the word circus. It sort of ushered in probably, probably like an era of media and journalism that we're not all too proud of, but it's just the way it is today. That trial was sensationalized. It was played out in the media really for the first time. Cable news had become a big thing. Court TV was in its infancy. And they seemingly had no control over that courtroom.
So it was Judge
and the things
Ito.
That, Judge Ito.
Right, it was
yeah.
Judge Ito, Marsha Clark.
Mm-hmm.
Dowden, was that his name? Christopher Dowden? He was a prosecuting
Chris
attorney.
Dowden sounds
Chris,
right.
Christopher Dowden.
It was definitely Marsha Clark was the lead, wasn't
yeah.
she?
Yeah, yes, Marsha Clark. And then on the other side, you had Kardashian.
You had
Dershowitz.
Yes, you did.
They had a couple other guys representing him over on that side.
Who's the most famous? Why am I blanking on his name? The one that they would spoof in Seinfeld years later.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember his name.
For some reason, I'm blanking.
I'm looking at him right now.
Of course I'm looking at him with the glasses and the fancy suits. I can't believe I'm blanking on his name right now. You know, you mentioned Lancito. I mean, Jay Leno made a, you know, you talk about a guy's career exploding because of using what was being sensationalized in the media. The dancing Itos, remember? On the Jay Leno show. I mean, this was the world back then, and there was a lot less. You know, there weren't as many options, and you couldn't get out of the way of what little options we had in terms of where we could go for content. Everybody was sensationalizing.
Isn't that where Van Susteren got her start, too?
I think you're right.
You guys are also one of the heydays of SNL.
Johnny Cochran.
Johnny Cochran. Thank you.
Johnny Cochran.
I don't know why I couldn't think of
trial.
Joe Pizzuto.
One of the prime, if you go through the eras of SNL, one of the prime eras of SNL was during this trial.
You know what's funny, Adam? I feel like maybe because of my age, I don't know. I don't, off the top of my head.
Norm McDonald.
Well, that's true.
Was
Norm
out there on Weekend Update
the day he
got acquitted and said murder is legal in L.A. today.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. Norm eviscerated him weekly.
Yeah. And that's why he was fired.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's why Owen Michaels got rid of him. All the guys above him. Ebersol or whoever was running the
NBC. Yeah, because they were friends with O.J.
Do you remember, Chris, can you find real quick the... I should have told you this right before the show started, Chris. I'm sorry. Can you find the Norm joke that he made at the ESPYs to Charles Woodson circa 90? What would that have been, 97?
Yeah, I can find it. I just saw someone on social media.
And I don't want to hear about, it's too soon, it's this and that. O.J. Simpson, like Yurko said... Whatever we once knew about him, the fabulous football player, the media star, O.J. Simpson is a despicable person. I don't want to hear it's too soon.
I mean,
it's despicable. And we all know it. And everybody does. So I don't expect much pushback. But I don't, you could, how could you guys play that on a day today when the man died? Please.
If the glove don't fit, you must quit from Mike.
Who said that?
Mike Joyce.
Yeah. So, Chris, find that real quick because Norm... Yes, Norm made, constant jokes and was satirical and really smart and funny about the whole thing. And so, Adam, you're right. I was going to say, I don't recall too much of, what SNL may have done in terms of spoofing it via skits. But Norm made a huge impact on the way it was perceived, on some of the comedy and the satire around it. Again, all the late night talk shows. And if you at any point want to chime in today, I don't even know what there is really to say about it other than the way we've kind of reminisced on what a bizarre time it was and the kind of media coverage that was sort of ushered in because it was so sensationalized, because he was such a celebrity. You're more than willing, welcome to share anything that you want about those days with us. 312-332-3776. We were talking about June 17th, 1994, and 30 for 30 once did a whole episode on
what happened
that day. Craziness of that day, because it was the Bronco chase. There was, the World Cup was kicking off here in Chicago. There was a bunch of stuff. Ken and Aurora remembered some of that. He wanted to talk about it. What's going on, Ken?
Not much. How are you guys doing today?
Great, man.
Good. I got a story that will be anybody's. It was my 19th birthday, and I was about to go up on stage at the Admiral Theater, and we were all watching the chase.
Wait, is this... So you're talking about the 17th and 94?
Yeah.
So you turned 19. I love it. You're at the Admiral Theater on the Northwest Side.
Yes,
I
was.
Not that it is or anything, but I mean, this is classic. Okay, so you're going on stage for your 19th birthday, and that's what people were watching?
All of us, including myself.
In the Gentleman's Club.
None of us were watching anything
else. The dancers and everything?
Everybody, yes. They had the chase on. It was fantastic. It was hilarious. We couldn't keep our eyes off the television.
Well, and it was also and Kenny, thanks, buddy. They were getting ready to play the NBA Finals. I remember exactly where I was.
Excuse me, ma'am. Could you move out of the way?
I know. That's classic.
I was in Green Bay.
Yurko's in the league in Green Bay. I had just graduated high school. It was the summer after my senior year. We were all going off to college. I remember exactly where I was the night of the chase, that summer night. I was at Lori Windsor's house with a bunch of us. Okay. No, stop it, you're
home. I said, okay.
I was at Lori Windsor's house. I was with my good friend Sue Odenkirk, who's Bob's younger sister.
Right.
John Roberts, who you know, who used to work with us here at ESPN Chicago on the digital side of things on the website. My friend Chris Lukowski. I mean, I remember we were all together. We were watching it. Sean Frazier. We were watching this happen, and we couldn't believe it. We couldn't believe it. And NBC's trying to find a way to play its coverage of Knicks. What would that would have been? Knicks and Rockets, right, Yurko?
Yeah, it was Knicks and Rockets. Game five.
It was game five.
Game five of the 94 NBA Finals. Houston, the Knicks.
The Rangers had won the Stanley Cup that summer. They were having, I believe, the parade.
Ticker tape parade on Broadway.
In Manhattan. They're getting ready for game five of the NBA Finals between the New York Knicks and the Rockets. The World Cup was kicking off here in Chicago at Soldier Field.
With Oprah Winfrey and Bill Clinton presenting everything.
That's right.
Look at these guys.
Rocco.
I know exactly what it is. That's Rocco. The World Cup. I think Arnold Palmer might have been playing his last ever round at the U.S. Open. His last ever competitive round.
Yes.
At the U.S. Open.
U.S. Open. 100% correct.
And in the midst of all of it, one of the legitimately most famous people in America at the time is being chased down a highway in Los Angeles in a white Bronco.
Ken Griffey Jr.
What was the Griffey
tying Babe Ruth's record of most home runs 30 before June 30th in the team's 65th game of the 94 Major League Baseball season?
I don't even remember that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I'm on the Wikipedia page.
It's
for
in the
June
documentary.
17th, 1994.
It is? Yeah, remember that.
Yeah. Because they show Griff, I think he hits a home run in Kansas City into the fountain, and they're talking about how this summer is going to be an incredible summer for this chase and how great Ken Griffey Jr. is.
A lockout a few months later. Lockout a few months later.
Arnie Palmer and O.J. Simpson filmed the Hertz commercial together.
Yeah.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. Which played during the whatchamacallit. So,
you know, if you're old enough to remember it, and again, I was going into college. Yurko was in the league. He was up in Green Bay. Chris and Adam are old enough to remember it. I mean, it's 30-something years. We have a lot of young listeners that weren't even alive. Think about that, you guys. I mean, it's 30 years
ago. I lived in overseas. I remember watching the verdict in Saudi Arabia.
Really?
Yeah, it was live. Obviously, it was live everywhere, but I remember watching it over in Saudi Arabia.
I think it's really tough for a young person to understand how limited our availability to media was at the time. So this was the only thing in the newspaper and on the news and on television at all times for the better part of what, a year?
A year and a half.
Year and a half.
That's the point I was trying to make.
It was the only thing that we consumed.
Chris is right. That's the point I was trying to make. Like, there were so our options were so much more limited, and this thing was everywhere. It was sensationalized everywhere.
You go to the grocery store, every single magazine, when you're checking out, was something about the O.J. trial.
Everything.
Every single magazine that's there when you're checking out the grocery store was about O.J.
And like I said, you had late night and then like shows like SNL and comedy shows and comedians being very irreverent and satirical about it and making comedy off of it. And you had like this courtroom drama splashed or broadcast on TV constantly. You had Johnny Cochran, who was larger than life, and used that to his advantage. And that defense team used every bit of that to its advantage. Racial tensions were high. I mean, it's...
When it comes to TV coverage, it really jump-started the breaking news 24-hour news cycle of coverage.
Yeah.
Like, before then, CNN... at least from my perspective, wasn't something that people were obsessively watching for breaking news at all hours of the day. And then Court TV started up.
Yeah, it ushered in a like I said, probably a somewhat less savory aspect of the media world.
You want the Norm joke?
Yeah, play the Norm joke. This is from the ESPYs. Would it have been like 98, 97 or 98?
Yeah, it had to have been because...
Whenever Charles Woodson had won the Heisman. So this was at the ESPYs. This was Norm Macdonald at the ESPYs.
And there's Charles Woodson. And what a season he had. Great, man.
He became the first defensive player to win the Heisman Trophy. And congratulations, Charles. That is something that no one can ever take away from you. Unless you kill your wife and a waiter, in which case... All bets are off. It's a word of advice.
Incredible. Incredible. Rest in peace, Norm MacDonald. Incredible. I mean, and just scorched earth. All right, we got a bunch of calls. We can take some calls on this. We got a lot of other things to do today. I mean, we're not going to spend the whole show. It was a very significant time in American history. OJ, thankfully, has sort of just kind of disappeared into the ether in recent years. I know he tried to make a go of it on social media a little bit when he got out of prison. I don't know how successful that really was at the end of the day. Again, like I said, he had kind of just sort of disappeared into the ether. OJ's dead at 76. 312-332-3776 is the number if you want to ring us up. It's Carmen in New York. We'll be right back.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitch at ESPN 1000 Chicago. Carmen and Yurko are back. This is Chicago's Home for Sports. ESPN Chicago.
Okay, so every day this week we've been giving you the wee whiskey fact of the day, right? Because we're qualifying people for one of the only, this is like the last two remaining Highlander VIP ticket packages, I guess. These are valued at like $300 a piece. The tickets are $300 a piece. And we're going to give away a couple of pairs tomorrow at the end of the show. So you still have today and tomorrow to qualify. That's four more opportunities to qualify. Just listen for the whiskey fact of the day about this time. And then later in the show during the 2 o'clock hour, if you're caller 10 and 20, you'll have a chance to correctly answer the question. And you can be a qualifier. It's as simple as that. We already have six. We got four more to go, good kid. And here's the wee whiskey fact of the day.
Let's hear it.
Yurko earlier in the week was talking about bottled and bond. Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Now, our whiskey laws here in America, very heavily regulated.
That's right.
The laws protecting bourbon, the government takes it very seriously, very heavily protected. Now, if you're going to make or sell something bottled and bond, you know, Yurko told you it must be aged at least 4 years. And that's
4 years.
True. It must be one distiller, one distilling season. There's also a proof that is very important. The proof of bottled and bond must be 100. It must be 50% alcohol by volume.
Has to be 100.
Has to be 100. Yes, to be bottled in bond. So there's your wee whiskey fact of the day. Just remember that. When we ask later, you'll be a caller 10 or 20 and say, oh, I know it. It must be 100 proof, and you can qualify.
Not a bad name for a horse, too, bottled and bond.
That is not a bad name for a horse. I'm guessing somewhere over the years, Yurko, somebody already came up with that.
I don't think so.
That's a great name for a horse.
Yeah, I think that's top notch.
Bottled and bond.
Give that one to Tommy next time. His brother's got a horse.
Waddle's got two beers by 10.
Two beers by 10 and another one called Smoky Smoky.
Oh, yeah? I didn't know that.
Smoky Smoky.
Smoky Smoky.
Smoky Smoky.
That's not bad.
Oh, good. Especially if he's in the league.
Here he
comes, splashing out of the turn. It's Smoky Smoky. Right?
I love it when we brainstorm good racehorse names, you know?
It's a good time.
I get a kick out of that. I guess I like dream of the day when I've got enough discretionary income to get in with you guys and own a racehorse. But it's not inexpensive. I don't think I want it. With young kids, I
want to
spend that kind of money yet. Maybe when I'm a little older. But I like brainstorming the idea.
Do we have golf, Carm? Could I ask you a quick question?
So golf is on. They're underway at Augusta. Now, they had a serious delay this morning because of the heavy storms that rolled in. I think they were anticipating that the late groups today that tee off as late as like 4:30 Eastern time aren't going to be able to finish their round. So we could see some guys on the course early tomorrow finishing round one.
They are pummeling the course today.
Well, it rained all morning. It's nice and soft.
It's raining. It's soft. Then go after it.
When these guys get soft conditions, even at a place like...
Go ahead. Oh, I thought you said when these guys get soft...
They need some blue chew.
I started snickering.
When they get soft, they need blue chew. When these guys, even at a course as challenging as this, when these guys have soft conditions and they can throw darts...
It's
like,
at the mercy of the golfers.
Yeah, like they're going to kill it.
Yeah, they're going to abuse this golf course today. There's going to be a lot of red numbers.
Well, I can get that quick leaderboard for you if you want.
I got your leaderboard right here, Carm. It is brought to you by Bottled and Bond, a future horse named by Carmen and Yurko.
Thank you.
That's funny.
Your leader right now through 12 is Erik van Rooyen. He is 3 under par. Also 3 under par is Danny Willett. Christo Lambrecht.
An amateur.
Close enough.
Yes. Bryson DeChambeau.
DeChambeau.
DeChambeau, that's what I said, yeah. Ryan Fox, Byung-Hung An, Santiago De La Fuente, also an amateur, is 2-under through 10. Thorbjørn Olesen is also 2-under.
Good job, Adam.
Yeah. Steven Yeager is 1-under, along with Corey Connors, Harris English, Sepp Straka, Joaquin Niemann, Justin Thomas, and Will Zalatoris.
I've got a ticket on Sepp Straka. Let's go, Sepp Straka.
The worst guy on the course right now is Luke List, plus 4.
Thank God I don't have a ticket on Luke List.
Luke List.
A lot of red numbers, though. Adam just rattled plus off four, a bunch of guys.
There'll be guys,
like 20 guys in red numbers. So
Jose Maria, I lost my ball.
Who was like longest odds on the board?
Yeah, he's at plus 3.
Yeah,
you know, just some of the big guys out there. You know,
a 2-time champion, is that right? Jose Maria lost.
I believe you're 100% correct.
2-time champ.
Yeah, Schauffele plus 1, Lucas Glover plus 1. You know, just some of the big guys.
And for those wondering, Tiger Woods tees off at 2:54 p.m.
Okay, our time, Adam, or East Coast time?
Our time.
Okay. A lot of big names still have to tee off. And like we said, there's a bunch of guys that probably aren't going to be able to finish their first round today because they were delayed this morning because of pretty bad storms passing through Augusta, Georgia.
Scheffler and McIlroy are on the course.
Scheffler and McIlroy are on the course.
They're on the course, playing the first
round. And Rory, again, trying to complete the career Grand Slam. This is the one he's missed. Do you realize it's been 10 years since Rory won a major? 10 years, Yurko.
I did not know
2014.
That.
Wow.
That's a long time.
Yes, it is. Eddie's on the north side on ESPN 1000. What's going on, Eddie?
Eddie!
Hey, boys. You know what? I lost the bet on that trial. I bet my friend that passed away a while ago, $200 I lost. And I could be, he said he's going to be not guilty, not guilty, not guilty. And sure enough, he was not guilty. And I was so surprised at that thing. But one thing with OJ,
I love how Eddie's betting the outcome of the OJ trial. That's cool.
Yeah, I know it's bad,
Eddie.
But hey, you know, we were gambling back then when we were all younger and everything too. But one of the most entertaining things in that trial was that guy that lived in the little house over there, the caretaker.
It was Cato Caitlin, right?
Yeah, Cato.
Yeah, that guy. And did OJ admit to it after, like, sick with this cancer and everything? That's the biggest question. I would like to hear, like, from their family
I asked Bleck and Abdallah that same thing this morning. Eddie, thanks, buddy. I asked Bleck and Abdallah that same thing. I'm like, do you think, like, he at some point he just wrote down? He's like, okay, obviously I did it. Like, and then Bleck goes, he already admitted it. He wrote that silly book. Remember, he wrote, like, the book where he's like, well,
how to do it?
If I did it, like, this is how it would have gone down, right?
Yeah, it was like,
he already did that in that book. Yeah. And I'm like, no, but I mean, did he actually, like, grab one of the family members and just be like, give me a pen? Okay.
I mean, if you want to talk about brazen cockiness, if you ever read the book, he goes into deep detail.
Does he?
He goes into deep detail on if he was standing there, how he would slice and how he would do it.
Get out of here. I never read that book. Are you serious?
Yeah, I have it.
Sounds like a good time.
I can bring it in for you if you want to read it. If you want to be a part of the Chris Bleck book club.
I don't. I got to be honest.
Ooh, should we do a summer book club?
I like to read, but I don't want to read that.
Cato Caitlin sat in that chair.
It's messed up.
Yeah, it is messed up.
We had Cato Caitlin,
frequent Cap'n Company, contributor,
because he's a huge Brewers fan,
right?
And when like the Brewers and the Cubs were, wasn't it like that?
I think Cap brought him down here and introduced me to him.
Yeah, I think you're
and
right.
Then we chatted with him.
Yeah, he was here. Yeah,
and he was on the phone a couple of times in the old Cap'n Company.
Big Brewer fan.
Yeah, but trash talking Cap with Brewers Cubs.
Yeah.
I did wonder that though, and I'm not even joking. What Eddie just said, I said it to Bleck and Abdallah this morning. I go, do you think he like? Did he hand a note to someone? Did he write it down finally? Like, did he tell him, all right, all the details are in the safety deposit box. Just go ahead now, you know. But then Chris reminded me of that book. I forgot about
that.
And then
proceeds of the book, because he put it out after the civil trial, and he said he didn't have, what was it, $33 million to pay back the other family.
The Goldman family. Yeah.
So all the proceeds from that book went to the Goldman family.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because he was trying to profit off of saying, like, admitting that he was there and that he did
it. Oh, my God. Unbelievable.
It's beyond messed up.
It's crazy. All right, we'll grab some more of your calls coming up here. We got, I see Bears. I see Billy Donovan to Kentucky, although it sounds like he shot that down. But whatever you want to talk about, ring us up at 312-332-3776. We'll play McKnight at the movies a little bit later on. We got Jesse at 2. It's Carmen and Yurko coming right back.
You're listening to Carmen and Yurko. Listen to us now. Live on the ESPN Chicago app. Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
Here it comes. Oh, my goodness. Oh, wow. In your life, have you seen anything like that?
That was Vern Lundquist. Back in 2005, I can't believe that's been almost 20 years, Tiger's famous chip-in on 16 en route to another green jacket, or one of his green jackets, I should say. Vern's calling his last Masters, Yurk. This is it. He has been one of the legendary voices at the Masters for a long time. He's been in that 16 tower, I feel like, for as long
forever,
as I can remember.
Yeah, forever.
Love Vern. I've always been a big fan of Vern Lundquist. I think he's always been great on college football, the golf stuff he's done for CBS over the years, and I've always loved that call. How do you not? Because it's pure, it's raw, it's real emotion. This is a professional broadcaster, and all he can say is, oh, wow, have you ever in your life seen anything like that? Like, Vern couldn't believe it. I love it when you get that.
That was great for the Nike commercial, too, remember? Because the Nike logo was sitting there.
How about it?
And then when it falls in, it held on the Nike logo and then dropped.
How about it?
Yeah.
I love when the call, like Al Michaels has talked over the years about the whole, do you believe in miracles? Right? And he said, and I think he's talked about, like, all he kept thinking in the final minutes, like, as he goes, okay, if this happens... And he's thinking about, like, how do I sum this up in this moment? And he said the word that just kept kind of, like, popping into his mind was miracle, or, like, miraculous.
Miraculous.
Right? He said, like, all I kept thinking was miraculous. And somehow in, like, the emotion of it, it just was like, do you believe in miracles? Like, I love that. And was it Jack Buck that had the famous...
I don't believe what I just saw.
Was that it, Yurk? Was it Jack Buck, right?
I believe so, yeah.
And, like, that's a real raw emotion of, like, this is a, like, what a moment this is. That was Gibson hitting the home run off Eckersley, wasn't it, Yurk? Do I have that right?
Yes.
Kirk Gibson was, like, basically on one leg. And they're like, okay, good luck to you. Like, here's our last-ditch effort. Here's pinch hitter. Kirk Gibson's going to come out now. And, like, he hits a home run off of Dennis Eckersley. And, like... The reaction was, I don't believe what I just saw. I love when a broadcaster gives you those real, raw emotions, and they're just so wrapped up in what they're seeing. And I've always loved that Vern call. So enjoy it this final weekend when you watch Vern for one final time at Augusta. I hope Tiger makes the cut. I don't expect Tiger to be able to compete. He just hasn't played enough golf, right, Yurk?
He's got the left ankle of his is fused.
Yeah.
He'll play well the first day. Today, I'm assuming he'll go out and shoot 70 2 under. You know, I'm thinking that's what he could shoot 2 under. And then the body, how does it recover for tomorrow?
Right.
Tomorrow's a little bit tougher. Say he makes the cut, and then Saturday and Sunday just become more of an impossibility.
Yeah.
The longer he goes on, something will ail him. Something will tweak, and then you'll see him reaching and doing this and doing that, and then we'll get the. Well, we're going to watch Tiger walk. Here's Tiger. He's walking.
There will be a lot of that.
And he's walking. It's the 11th hole, and he's walked 100 yards. And we're going to stay with him here as he walks 280 yards to his drive. Do you see a limp there, Ken?
I see a limp.
Is there a limp there, Ken? Do you see his gait pattern changing at all? But let's focus back on Tiger as he walks. Once again, he's walking. Yeah. Too much of that crap for my want. I want to see shots.
Because he's not factoring in the golf as much. I know
right.
what you mean.
Yeah.
If he makes the cut, he will set the all-time record for consecutive cuts made at the Masters. Pretty impressive. He is tied right now at 23 consecutive cuts made. Matt's in Streamwood on ESPN 1000 with Carmen and Yurko. What's going on, Matt?
Hey, Carmen Yurko. Thanks for taking my phone call. I just want to let you know, Christopher Darden was the assistant DA with Marsha Clark.
That was Darden.
Yeah, Christopher Darden.
If you never saw the People versus OJ FX documentary, it was outstanding 12-part series that had all the stars in it. It was a great series,
yeah.
Like 10 years ago they did. But my call is regarding Yurko and Carm, is regarding the number one pick that we're only going to bring in one quarterback to do the 30 visits for this organization. I understand they had a number one pick and that they did, are they sure they don't want to see any other quarterback besides Caleb Williams for this visit? Because I was just researching, like I know Waddle and Sylvie were talking about when Andrew Luck and RG3 in 2012 that Indianapolis and Washington both brought in Andrew Luck and RG3, and then RG3 declined to visit with the Indianapolis Colts, so that's why they chose Andrew Luck. And I was just researching. I know, you know, as you know, with 2017, we brought in Mitch Trubisky and Patrick Mahomes. You know, I know we didn't have number one pick, but we were picking three, but I know we moved up, but I'm saying. And then in 2018, I saw that Cleveland brought in, you know, Baker Mayfield and Josh Allen and Sam Darnold. You know, so they brought in many quarterbacks, just not one quarterback to look for their 30 visits. So I'm like confused that they brought in 12 people for the number nine pick, but they only brought in one person for the number one pick. Nothing's more important for this organization to finally get that 80-year drought that we've had with a quarterback to be done. So I'm just confused. Like, is there some reason that they don't want to look at any other quarterback, or they just don't want to be taken off of Caleb Williams to lose their sight of Caleb Williams, that they're just scared to see someone else?
I don't know, man. This is a foregone conclusion, but I don't know what else to say. I mean, he's not – this is the only visit he made. It's the, like you said, it's the only quarterback the Bears are bringing in. There's just no drama or secret. They've known for weeks. They've known for weeks and weeks and probably months who they're taking, guys. I mean, again, there's just like, what's the point of bringing in anybody else? They haven't even tried to play games. They haven't tried to hide the fact. They have, like, so I don't know. What would be the point of bringing in anybody else? He made one visit. They had one quarterback in. This is who they're taking.
Period.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like
they're taking Caleb Williams.
Somebody had said.
And if they miss on Caleb Williams.
Oh, well, that'll
God
suck.
God forbid.
Yeah, that'll suck.
If they miss on Caleb Williams, one of these other guys turns into a superstar.
That'll suck, Yerk.
Then we'll be asking, why didn't they look at anybody else? Were they 100% sure? Were they this? Were they that? Were they that?
Yeah, we'll be back to square one. That'll suck.
But like, you won't find out for 4 years.
That's true. Three, maybe. Usually about three. But I mean, at this point, what would be the benefit of bringing in anybody else? Like, I guess Matt's asking, like, could somebody else have changed their mind if they brought in another quarterback? Will we look back on that and say, oh boy, that was foolish? Maybe. I don't know. I don't want to deal with that.
I want the quarterback to come in here and be successful.
Me too. I hope that doesn't happen.
I've done this twice with Mitch Trubisky.
I know.
I've done it with Justin Fields. I've done it with Jay Cutler, right? Cutler was the first Messiah, right?
Yeah.
The first Messiah was supposed to be Jay Cutler to come in and save it all.
I think they've done a lot of work on Caleb, and I mean a lot. And in their minds, they're convinced. Let's just hope they're right. Nothing's going to change their mind now, I guess, Matt. Like Drake May or Bo Nix or Jaden Daniels coming in is not going to change their minds. So I get it. I just hope all the work they've done, I hope it all pays off. Because they've done a lot of work on Caleb. They've done a lot to surround him in that offensive huddle as best they possibly can. So, like, this is it. This is the pick 2 weeks from tonight. And let's hope it works. It's Carmen and Eric. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Carmen and Yurko. Follow the show on Twitter at Carmen DeFalco and at Yurko64. This is ESPN Chicago, Chicago's home for sports.
Waddle and Sylvie had a good conversation yesterday during their 3 o'clock hour about moving up for Marvin Harrison, if the Bears would be inclined, what it would cost, what it would take. I'm with you and Waddle, Yerk. Like, I'm not interested if it's going to cost me a first-round pick or multiple seconds. I think the receiver class is deep. I think Adunze can be a stud. I think Neighbors might be a stud. Heck, Brian Thomas might be a stud. Xavier Worthy might be a stud at some point.
They all could be studs.
Adonai Mitchell might be a stud, right? Like, it's an impressive group.
Three of the four first-rounders hit last year.
Yeah.
Three of the four first-rounders hit last year. The only one not hitting was the Charger.
You could, yeah, that's right, Quentin Johnston. You could probably, you know, I'd be very intrigued if you were going to tell me it would cost just a swap of picks this year and then, like, one of those 2 seconds next year. But the minute it gets into multiple picks or a first-rounder, I'm a no.
I heard those guys talking about it. Yeah, I don't. I don't want it at all.
Yeah?
No, I don't want it at all. They talked about what Houston gave up to get Will Anderson last year, moving from where they were to number three. I don't want that at all.
But you know what, Yerk? I'd be more willing to do something like that for a great pass rusher than a great receiver. And don't misunderstand it. Like, this is a passing game. I get the value in it. Like, DJ Moore's a stud. Love Keenan Allen. Like, yeah, everybody would love to have a Jamar Chase or a Justin Jefferson. Like, but am I going to... It's hard in football, man. There's 22 guys. Am I going to do better long term with the stud pass rusher or the stud receiver? You know what I mean? Like,
if there was a stud pass rusher in this draft,
right,
he'd be going in the top 8 picks.
No, and I know I don't mean like that. You're trading up this year. I'm just saying like what Arizona or what Houston did for Will Anderson. Like, right. Can you almost see that more going after a stud pass rusher instead of a stud receiver? That's what I mean.
Yes. Yes, I think you can see that for a stud guy that can get to the quarterback.
Yes, I kind of agree with that.
Right.
As much as we love and sensationalize receivers, I mean, I just think it's. I'm with you. Like, if I've identified a guy who's going to be a dominant pass rusher, I'd be more willing to make that kind of trade up. And I think you could stay at 9 and do just fine with Roma Dusey, and even more than just fine if he's there for you. It's interesting, I guess, if he's not, but then your scenario comes into play. Then you're backing up. Then you're acquiring more picks.
I am, but I think Adunze is going to be there at 9. Well, it'll find out like two Thursdays from now. We're going to see it all play out in front of us.
We got 2 weeks.
Is there going to be a surprise? Is somebody going to do something crazy? Is somebody moving up in front of the Bears to do something crazy?
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Yeah.
I can't wait to see it.
Some drama should unfold after that first pick. The only thing that doesn't have any drama attached to it is the first pick. After that, it could get interesting. Josh is in Columbus. Hey, Josh.
Hey, boys. Appreciate you taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, before I get into why I was calling, you know, I think one thing to kind of remember, especially when Houston traded up last year, like they had a ton of first-round picks from trading away Deshaun Watson to a seemingly desperate Cleveland Browns team. Like, I'm not sure the Bears – you know, have the same amount of draft capital that the Texans had a season
right.
ago. So
yeah.
I'm with you guys. I'm not for, you know, moving up in a receiver rich draft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear you, Josh.
Yeah, but the reason I called, I actually want to talk a little bit. I want to talk a little hoops. I want to talk a little Billy Donovan. I know that he kind of came out earlier this week and gave us some coach speak about not being interested in the Kentucky job and kind of being committed to the Bulls. But guys, like, if I'm Billy and Kentucky comes calling, like, I might want to take a minute or two and really consider that job. I mean, when you look at the state of the Bulls, like, really for the next 2 or 3 years, like, they're borderline stuck. And, like, barring, you know, you're able to get something of note in a Zach LaVine trade or you're able to knock it out of the park with kind of like a fringe lottery pick this year, like, you're stuck with really nowhere to go. And I know that we can talk about, like, kind of the downfall of college basketball until we're blue in the face, but I can't imagine that competing for, like, the ninth seed in the East is really scratching Billy's competitive itch.
That's a fair point, Josh. I mean, he has sort of said, right, in the last day or so that I don't think didn't Billy say something to the effect that he hasn't been approached and he's happy where he is at? I don't know, Josh. Like, what would it take to lure him away? I don't disagree with any of your points about the state of the Bulls.
What if he calls them?
Mm.
What if he's like, hey, Kentucky?
I don't know, man. It's hard to know what's going on in a guy's mind. I don't cover that team. None of us are around that team. I don't have any inclination whatsoever. But I don't disagree with any of Josh's points. They're points we've made forever at this point. Joe Colley was just again in the Sun-Times either yesterday morning or this morning writing about how AK needs a change of heart on roster building, that he should try to just trade what he can and reset things. You know, if they, like, pick, let's say next year, like, they get silly and they're like, well, everybody will be healthy and we'll be better. And, like, they pick 11th or 12th. You know that pick goes to San Antonio next year? It'd be another, like, it'd be another pick that they just, it's top 10 protected. I mean, if anything, doesn't it behoove them to kind of just, maybe you shouldn't be very good next year? I don't want to say, like, tanking and get into the debate about, oh, you shouldn't tank, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that.
But you want to protect the pick is what you're saying.
Yeah, but don't you kind of want your pick probably for a team that is going where? Nowhere.
Cowley's point this morning in the Sun-Times was that with Cooper Flagg going to Duke, and he's the number one prospect for a year from now in the draft, that this is the time to look at tanking.
Like, look at maybe, you know, not being very good, making sure that you've got your pick, and it's in the top 10, and it's in the lottery. Maybe you get a little lucky. Because I don't know how else they're going to do it with the roster they've constructed. I don't want to be Debbie Downer about it, but, man, I mean, like, Cowley had a good line. I'll read you some of it. And he's right about this. Bulls vice president, I just call him AK, it's easier, has forgotten more basketball than any fan or media member will ever know. You're fooling yourself if you think otherwise. He has the pulse of player development, scouting, analytics, and cap issues, and also understands the politics of ownership and the underlying agenda of his bosses. The media aren't privy to a lot of that info, but that doesn't rule out blind spots. And as much as AK has over the masses, this thing just skipped on me, Yerk, you know, sometimes.
I know how it works.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
And as much knowledge as AK has over the masses when it comes to his organization, observers know what a title contender should look like, and this ain't it. Amen. Amen. That summed up perfectly.
Oh, yeah.
This ain't any kind of title contender.
Ooh.
Not with Lonzo and Zach and everybody in the lineup, Yerk.
Yeah.
It ain't any kind of title contender, folks.
No, it's just a mediocre team. It's a very mediocre team. This would be a team that misses the playoffs again, if not for the stupidity of COVID.
Well, they might miss the playoffs again with the silly playing game, because they might get bounced in a playing scenario again.
Like I said, they'd just be a normal, average, crappy team missing the playoffs all the time.
Yeah. 312-332-3776 is the number. Ring us up. We're back in 2 minutes.